This episode is brought to you by Audible.com. They've got over 100,000 titles of digital audio information and entertainment. Can you imagine it? I'll bet you can. Playable on any device. And I'm going to tell you how you can get a free audiobook in just a few minutes. Welcome to the show. I'm Dan Persons. And a fun interview this time, the brain trust behind Stupid Buddy, the studio that does Robot Chicken, Titan Maximum, stuff like that. That would be Eric Towner, Matthew Senreich, and John Harvatine IV, otherwise known as Harv. Seth Green, by the way, is also involved in the company, but he was otherwise occupied, so he didn't attend this interview. But they do have a new web series now called Friendship All-Stars of Friendship. Yes, that's the title that we'll be talking about. It's basically these pair-ups of two celebrities that you can guess, yeah, they might be friends, like Guillermo del Toro and Ron Perlman, not a stretch there, or David Bowie and Banksy, which has a weird sort of logic to it. And it puts them into sketches where they demonstrate how they're just the bestest friends ever. It's all very silly and very funny. And you may remember that a couple of months ago we had an interview with Kevin Shinnick, who was a writer on Robot Chicken and is now writing and producing and voicing a lot of Mad. And now we're interviewing these guys, which may lead you to believe that I have a kind of a thing for Robot Chicken. Let me just clarify that, just in case you've been mistaken all this time. Yeah, I really do like Robot Chicken. Yes, it can be painfully sophomoric at times, but like Michael O'Donohue once said, sophomoric is the liberal code word for funny. And for all the piss and fart and shit gags and nutshots, they're not afraid to get deeply geeky with their satires in ways that really do hit the mark. One particular sketch that I loved was one in which Dean Koontz tries to bond with Stephen King, and everything Koontz tries to connect with is just of a slightly lower quality than King's, like whipping out his Zune when he sees King's iPod. Speaking of their nerd instincts, they also did a sketch where their nerd character dreams he's in the anime series Ranma 1/2, and they go all the way to referring to it by the actual Japanese title now. How many people watching Adult Swim would recognize that? Yeah, probably a lot, but nevertheless, it does demonstrate their bona fides. All of which is to say that I really enjoyed talking to these guys, and we're going to get to it in a bit, but first, let's talk about our sponsor, Audible.com. And you know what it's about. Audible is the leading provider of premium digital audio content, which means they've got books, audiobooks, of course, but also radio shows, podcasts, and it's all downloadable to pretty much any device that will play an audio file. So that means iPods, iPads, tablets, laptops, the thing that you're listening to this podcast on right now, that'll play an Audible download for sure. So they've got over 100,000 titles. They've also got an offer for a free audiobook download. And with over 100,000 titles, should be very easy for you, yes, you, to download something that you know you're going to like. And how easy is it? Well, let's just take an example. We are talking to the people who produced Robot Chicken in this show. So if you do follow the series at all, you know that they are real big fans of the Star Wars series. At least the Star Wars, the original Star Wars trilogy, maybe not the Star Wars prequel trilogy, but they are into the thing. So, you know, you go to Audible, you put in Star Wars in their search engine, look what comes up right off the top. Star Wars, Spectre of the Past, The Hand of Thrawn, Book 1 by Timothy Zahn. It just got released, as a matter of fact, last week, and it's Book 1, so there are many, many more books to come, I'm sure. If you're into anime, since they are into anime as well, you plug in anime, you get Hayao Miyazaki, Japan's premier anime storyteller by Jeff Lenberg. That's an audiobook download. You can get that and find out more about the guy who did Kiki's Delivery Service and Spirited Away and all that sort of good stuff. And by the way, just for fun, if you plugged in Robot, what do you get? Well, among other things, you get iRobot by Isaac Asimov, the classic collection of Asimov's robot short stories. Now, the graphic that they have there does feature Will Smith, but this is not a movie tie-in sort of thing. This is the collection of the Asimov short stories, which are very, very good. By the way, just while we're talking Robot Chicken, no, there isn't a story about a robot pumping a washing machine in there anywhere. So, sorry, if you're looking for that, you'll be disappointed. But otherwise, I mean, if you like science fiction, and if you've never read any of the Asimov robot stories, you really got to get a hold of this. And you can do it for free. How do you do it? Very simple. You go to audiblepodcast.com/mightmovie. Let me say that again. audiblepodcast.com/mightmovie. Because in movie, there is might. You need to go there to get the free audiobook. And you should do that now. And, okay, that's done. Let's get to the good stuff now. Here come Eric Towner, Matthew Senreich, and John Harvertine IV, collectively known as Stupid Buddy Studios, on the CFQ interview. First off, introduce yourselves so that the listeners can identify the voice with the name.
This is Matthew Senreich.
This is Eric Towner.
And I'm Harv.
Okay. And before we get into the full talk, I've got a personal question that I gotta resolve here because it's been haunting me for years. And Matt, I think you'll be the person who can best answer this. Is the title
Titan? You have me extremely intrigued.
Is the title Titan Maximum a double entendre?
Yeah, we were going for, we wanted big and then bigger.
Yeah, okay.
And the more absurd the name, the funnier it was for us.
Okay. I was sort of thinking of it. I was trying to figure it out as tight and maximum, which seems to be a contradiction in terms.
No. We definitely wanted the idea that Titan was the moon of Saturn that we were using, and it meant big, and then going bigger than that, we just thought was very funny.
Okay. This, I guess, is going to be sort of a state of the production company kind of conversation. I did want to ask you this. There seems to be sort of a 6 degrees of monkey going on here, because you started out with Stupid Monkey, and that begat Stupid Buddy Productions, and now there's Buddy System Productions. What's the progression here? What's the process?
The actual simple answer to that is Seth and I created a company called Stupid Monkey when we started Robot Chicken, and Harv and Towner has left our company in the second season of Robot Chicken, and they formed their own company called Buddy Systems. So they were doing their own work, which was like television, movie, and commercial work, and they were working separately from us. And then after our first season, our fifth season of Robot Chicken, Seth and my Stupid Monkey merged with Harv and Towner's Buddy Systems to create Stupid Buddy.
Okay, so that's clear now. Was there any sort of negotiation about who gained custody of the figures or anything like that, or?
I think we all came out winners.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can see a little piece of both of us in that Stupid Buddy logo.
previously, I don't know if you knew this, but I had interviewed Kevin Shinnick about MAD. And by the way, you wouldn't believe how he talks smack about you guys. But
going down.
Just because he's better looking than us.
He did talk a bit about the creative process of writing for Robot Chicken. And it, granted, at my age, this sort of thing shouldn't surprise me that it isn't all people lighting farts and wearing mustache glasses there. But give me your take on the creative process, the writing process there. I mean, is there any fun to be had in the writing room?
Yeah, I mean, I'm assuming you're talking for Robot Chicken specifically versus the other projects that we have going on.
Yeah, yeah.
But for Robot Chicken, it's really six people in a room trying to come up with as many concepts as possible because we're such a fast-paced show. And it makes for a very tricky setup because you really work from like 9 to 4 of just writing as fast as you can. And then at the end of the day, the power-hungry idiots that are myself, Seth, our head writers, Tom and Doug, and now our director, Zeb, are the only ones who get to vote on these ideas. But for the most part, you just sit in there, and it's a bunch of friends trying to make each other laugh. And that's what I always come back to. It's not us saying, what do we need, or what is the audience going to like, or what should we be doing? It's really just all of us going, we think this is funny, and that's what gets into the show.
Mm-hmm. You hear the stories about the writing atmosphere at Saturday Night Live, and particularly how hellacious it is. It isn't quite that, is it?
I don't think it's quite that. I actually think it's more lighthearted. And from all the people I know who've been in other rooms, they say we're the nicer of the rooms, which is nice to hear. They might just be saying that to us.
We don't know exactly. Kevin Schnick said, maybe he said something.
I know, Kevin could have just totally trashed us, but I doubt it. Kevin was one of the nicer people in the room, actually. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, it's what makes it so hard is that there's so much content that's created that gets rejected. And that just takes a personal toll to you. You know, like it's hard to, you know, put your ideas out there and just have them be simply disregarded as a no. In the span of like 30 seconds. So I think that's what makes the creative process so tough is you become attached to the creative ideas that you're coming up with.
So you are nominated for a few Emmys this year, and you've already got, I think, 4 Emmys to your names. So are you jaded about this whole process now?
Your mantle is definitely getting hit.
You actually made my eyes go wide going, we have 4 Emmys?
keeping track.
I know. I was like, I have one, which I'm shocked that I even have. This process is surreal, and every time you get that call at 6 a.m. that you've been announced as an Emmy nomination, it's mind-blowing. You don't understand why, and I think it keeps you humble in that regard because for us, especially with stop motion, we're making this show every day. It takes us 14 months out of the year to make a season. So again, I always like to point out how long that takes. We are never paying attention to when that award time comes around, and it's a nice surprise. And it just is that pat on the back of the slave process that we go through to make this show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you guys.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of work that goes into it, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and some laughs along the way, and it's always you know, just super rewarding to be recognized in any way. So
yeah, and I think it's great for stop motion to get recognized because I feel like back in the 90s or whatever, early 2000s, it's like stop motion was just kind of dying, and you didn't really hear about it as much. But if anything, the Emmy nominations helped bring it to the front.
Mm-hmm. This year, one of the nominees is the ATM Christmas special. One of the winners, I think it was last year, was the DC animated special. But from what I'm hearing here, it isn't like you say, well, the special episodes, these theme episodes, are going to be the ones that we're going to be submitting to the Academy.
No, I mean, Yeah, the ones we end up submitting, you know, we look for something that would pop from the season of the one we submit. We find that the Christmas specials have a little bit more of a cohesive through line, which makes people just kind of grab onto it as opposed to just an overall random sketch show that can jump all over the world. Focusing in on Christmas, I think, just has that unifying theme to it, or the DC special is a unifying theme to it. Same with our Star Wars specials, which have been nominated. I think it just helps the audience grasp our show a little bit more than the cult following it may have.
So one of the other things that you're doing that was called to my attention is this this web series, Friendship All Stars of Friendship, which is a great title, by the way. And can you give me the genesis of this and what this is?
Oh, are you still there?
Hello? Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry. Did I break up there? Let me ask you again. I wanted to find.
We missed the second half.
Sounds like it's through the phone.
Okay, I tend to shout when I'm doing these sort of things. Let me talk a little quieter.
Are you yelling at us?
Again, energy, you know, energy, presence. What I was asking was, what I wanted to find out was what the show was, or have you explain what the show is, and also give me some idea of what the genesis of this thing was.
The genesis of that show was one of our very talented animators, Harry Chaskin, had pitched us an idea for a show that he wanted to do, and showed us an animatic for it, which was, you know, just the storyboard and the dialogue cut together of what is now the pilot episode, the Ron and Guillermo episode. And we just thought it was really silly and really fun. And
Let's be clear. We, meaning Harvin Towner.
Yeah, it took a little more.
Yeah, it took me a little. Yeah, I was
Seth on board.
I was a little hesitant on it, and it wasn't until I actually saw the animation, which we allowed them to do in our studio because Harvin Towner were really behind it, did I really grasp the concept. I had a hard time visualizing it. But I completely go the other way now, because when I saw that Ron and Guillermo short and what the potential for this thing could be, my head exploded with excitement.
It's kind of disgusting.
Yeah.
But that was something, you know, before we got it picked up as a web series, we went and helped the guys, the creators, Harry, Dan Lippert, and Justin Michael, create that pilot episode. And once everybody was able to see what this thing was going to be, it made it a lot easier and got everybody really excited.
I can understand why there could be a divide from this, because this is sort of a departure from what I expect coming out of your studio here. In particular, the fact that a lot of the comedy, definitely in Robot Chicken and Titan Maximum, is all about the amount of friction that can be generated between two characters. And this goes in completely the opposite direction. It's essentially getting humor about how much the characters can get along with each other.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest misconception with our studio, and just because Robot Chicken has become popular and, you know, we started with it, and Titan was just, you know, this other idea to try to get on Adult Swim to keep us, you know, working with Adult Swim. Adult Swim is just one avenue that we work with. I mean, we do multiple other shows, both online. There's something called Dinosaur Office that we do the production for. We have pilots set up with Cartoon Network and, you know, younger versions of stuff. But again, every show is different, and every style for these shows are different. And that's the fun of animation and writing, for that sake. I always laugh because, you know, even me, my first stuff sold as a writer were one-hour dramas for Fox, and I'm supposed to be a sketch comedy show writer now, which I don't think I am. It's you write what you feel and what you think, and you try to make it the best it can be, and it's the same with, you know, the animation that we do through the studio. It's what's best for the project, and that's the fun in trying to figure that stuff out.
Yeah, I would say there's a huge range of sensibilities and styles with a lot of the projects that we have in development right now. So it's something that we're definitely focusing on as a company, is just showing that range and really all the other fun stuff that we can do.
Mm-hmm. And yet, particularly with the first two episodes of Friendship All-Stars that I've seen, there's still this sort of intensely nerdy outlook to it. I mean, it doesn't go for sort of the obvious pop culture couplings here. It's stuff that nerds would understand. Very definitely the Guillermo del Toro, Ron Perlman one does, but also the John Lasseter, Luis Guzman one sort of focuses on something that really only sort of, if you're intensely nerdy about these genres, you'd really understand what's going on. Is there concern you get too esoteric with these?
You know, it's one of those things where I like to think that Ron and Guillermo, or even the John Lasseter, Luis Guzman one, if you don't even know who they are and you just call them John and Louise, and they're next door neighbors and they're trying to one-up each other wearing different Hawaiian shirts, you don't need to know who these people are. It's just a basic silly concept that just makes it funny. If you know who they are and you lay on the fact of their history and their popularity of who these people are, I think it adds an extra element to it. But even Ron and Guillermo, it's just two friends giving each other presents and trying to outdo how much they love each other. It just adds that extra layer if you happen to know who these people are.
Mm-hmm. So what's it doing with the series? How many episodes are there going to be at this point? Right now there are only two up on the web. How many have been ordered? What's up next?
We are doing 10 episodes of that for L Studio. So I think they're airing them or posting them every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I did want to ask you about the style of animation here, because it is markedly different from the Robot Chicken style of animation. It seems to reflect more on the style of animation that was being done for Frankenhole, but doesn't seem to be the paper cutout, the same paper cutout technique as that. Can you explain a little bit about developing the look for this?
Yeah, well, the designs, it all starts with the character design. So Harry, one of the creators, he would do, you know, just basically draw out his version of the characters. And, you know, with a lot of the projects, we do like that the style really differs from one thing to the next. Like Robot Chicken has a really distinct kind of crude, down and dirty style, the sticker mouths, all of that, which is great. And that's exactly what that show needs to be. So for something like this, it was really just trying to capture those characters in kind of a silly, different way. Hopefully something that wasn't totally expected and does look a little bit different than other stuff out there. So that was kind of the thinking behind that, and really a lot of the other projects that we're working on too, is just what's going to make it feel a little different than other things out there. It's going to make it feel kind of fresh, you know, and that's kind of the focus behind that, is putting that stuff into consideration.
Mm-hmm. I've got to ask this because, of course, in the past few years, Disney has given up on old school 2D line animation and has gone with CG completely. You're sticking with stop motion. Have you been hearing the siren call of CG? Have you been tempted by it?
I mean, you know, we've definitely, as a studio, have been involved with a lot of other things other than stop motion. Actually, one of the pilots that I don't think we can really talk about yet, but one that we're doing later this year is going to be a 2D, kind of a throwback to 80s cartoons. Mm-hmm. That's going to be pretty exciting for us. So we've definitely done some CG stuff, some 2D stuff, and just getting more into it. Again, it's really what's going to be right for the project.
Yeah, I mean, we don't consider ourselves a stop-motion animation studio. We consider ourselves an animation studio that just happens to be doing a lot of stuff in stop-motion.
So the publicity material that I did get did mention another project of yours, Urban Mansion, with which Bryan Cranston is involved. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Zeb Wells, who's a popular comic book writer and also our director on Robot Chicken, and I had an idea for just doing kind of like a behind the scenes of, in the comic books, you always see the Justice League satellite or the Avengers Mansion and what these superheroes do when they live together in some capacity. So we kind of took archetypes of those and created our own little superhero universe. And in the process of putting this together, Bryan Cranston, we were talking to about it, loved it so much that he got involved early on and developed it with us. And voices our main character in that. And we debuted a trailer of it at Comic-Con. It seemed to go over really well. We're in the process of writing a few more episodes, and you know, hopefully Adult Swim will look to pick it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, is this also going to be stop motion?
Yes, that will be stop motion.
But all original characters, I gather.
All original characters. It will also look different than different, but the same from Robot Chicken. Mm-hmm. Is the best.
You know, I've been watching the Justice League and Justice League Unlimited episodes now on Netflix, and it always strikes me as it just feels sort of odd when you see up in the Watchtower, you know, the characters hanging out with each other. It just doesn't seem to jibe right.
Yeah, we like to explore those awkward moments and show what's really happening during that time. You know, our Robot Chicken DC comic special, I think, does that really well. And I think our second one that we're doing right now will do that even better with the villains and just how they all hang out together.
There was also the mention of a feature project, and I checked on IMDb, and there's something called, I think, Secret Cabinet listed there. Is that the same one and the same thing?
What was it called?
Secret Cabinet, I do believe.
Oh. That actually was a pilot that was being done. This was a TV thing with Seth was writing it with Mike Doherty, Bob Orsi, and Jon Favreau. That was a feature that was a TV pilot that was done last season, and it wasn't sadly picked up.
Will it show up somewhere at some time?
As with most pilots that don't get picked up, if it does, it may not be for a while, but, you know, it went through that pilot process at a network.
Okay. And if it does show up, I'm going to presume it's going to be a sort of nudge, nudge, wink, wink sort of thing.
No, that was a live action, like no joke kind of pilot.
Ah.
Like that was a swing for the fences type of thing. I'm not sure what would happen with that and what the status is right now.
Okay, say no more. How many projects are in the works right now at the studio?
A lot.
Man, that's crazy. Yeah. We're looking at a board right now. Like 23 things on it.
There's about a dozen projects that are active, which are in production. You know, ranging from web series to TV shows to commercials to kind of everything. And then we've got about maybe another 10 that are in active development at different networks and, you know, studios. So it's keeping us busy. That's good.
How many animators do you have working for you at this point?
Yeah, when we're fully ramped up on Robot and the other projects, we'll be around 25. We have 25 stages for stop motion here at the studio and about 90 employees, I think, altogether. Like, just really amazing artists, really talented people.
Good Lord.
We're lucky.
And, Can they move from one project? Can they move easily from one project to another, from one style to another?
Yeah, the artists are all pretty talented. They move around the board. Like,
yeah, you know, I think I think again, it comes back to what I was saying before, where I think that's what artists want to do. I don't think artists want to be on the same thing day in and day out.
Sanding ahead for 2.5 years or something like that. I think they like to mix it up and play around.
Yeah, and we like to try to find the things that those artists are wanting to do. You know, that's the best part that we get to try to figure out. A lot of the times our projects, you know, some of the projects that we're working on are people that work in this building who had ideas that we're helping them get those things done. That's how the Friendship All-Stars began.
And one thing we're doing right now that's actually pretty exciting is we're doing a shorts program with Adult Swim. And it was basically us taking pitches from our crew and our artists, and we got like 80 or 90 pitches, and there's just, you know, some really fantastic ideas that we're now going to be producing.
So these are going to be like standalone shorts?
Yeah, they'll be standalone shorts that are 30 seconds to a minute. And, you know, with that idea of, hey, if there's something that really pops there, maybe that could be a show.
Sounds cool. Is there an umbrella title for that yet, or?
Not yet. We haven't really honed in on that.
Here's a clever name.
Yeah, do you got anything?
How about umbrella title?
Perfect.
Perfect. We'll take it.
There you go. You can have it for free.
Okay.
Matt, Eric, and Harv, thank you very much for talking with us.
No, thank you so much for having us. And we really appreciate it.
So that was great, huh? You can check out Friendship All-Stars of Friendship by going to friendshipallstars.com. I really do like the sketch that they have with Ira Glass and Garrison Keillor there, that pair up. But they're all pretty funny, so you should check it out. You want to write me about anything you've heard in the show or about anything regarding genre film or TV at all, you can send that good stuff to podcast@cinefantastiqueonline.com. And coming up Monday on The Spotlight, there's no new genre film opening in theaters, but next week there's going to be a re-release of the restored version of The Wicker Man. And so we're going to be discussing that. And joining us for that will be John Moorhead of TheoFantastique.com. So this should be an interesting discussion. You probably shouldn't miss it. So that's it. Remember to get your free audiobook download at audiblepodcast.com/mightmovie and have fun. This has been a production of Upstart Company NYC, copyright 2013 Dan Persons, all rights reserved, no unauthorized duplication permitted.